It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Indeed, here we go, off and running on this 27th day of October 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. That's where we keep the, among other things, we keep the chat room, which is, in fact, a merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that's free for your participation. Just jump right on in. Early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky are there waiting to greet you. If you've never been there before, pick out a screen name and a password, jump in. If you have been there before, maybe you haven't been in a while, well, come on by and say howdy as more folks arrive here with the beginning of the live program. You will, of course, be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave here as we wind down the month of October, and capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Skeeve! Gotta yell that. In a minute, he'll type back, Blob! And all will be right with the universe. Hi, I'm Bob. It is Titanic Tuesday on The Horn. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So many, many thanks go out to our 27th day of the month subscribers. Thank you most kindly. That means thanks to Robert in Australia, and thanks to Gary in Gaia. Thank you kindly indeed. Where's the fundraising goal stand for this evening, Bob? Well, see, there it is in the chat room. Bob! Yep. The fundraising goal stands at $325, which is not at all bad for our new attempt to make things a little less sweaty and fretful. Maybe that would be shretful, because I can't make the FW thing work. But yeah. But anyway, $325 as we try to wind down the month of October and pay a couple of bills that'll make November a lot more likely. That's where things stand. If you'd like to help out, run over to HeadOn.live. It's right there on the main page, the PayPal interface. If you have any problem kicking in, shoot me an email and let me know, because there are some security protocols that sometimes emails get rejected. But if you just let me know, Brother Deacon Asa will go in and make it all right. Okay? Okay. So it is Trump-tanic Tuesday, a day for celebrating that sort of right-wing intellect that says, forward into the iceberg, we'll show it a thing or two. And you got some of that. Thank you very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut. We're going to start the evening with a $100 challenge. Thank you, Darlene. That is amazing. So that would, if we can do $100, if there are 10 folks with 10 bucks, or 5 with 20, or 1 with 100, or who knows, if we can do that, then we will be down to just $125 bucks, and off, and that would be fantastic. So Darlene is willing to double your money up to $100. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very kindly. That's how we keep all of this going without having to run. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Buy high and sell cheap. That's what we do here at Buy Gold Now Associates. Yeah, sheesh. Okay, thank you, Randy Radar, letting me know that the high-quality horn stream over at White Rose Society isn't playing, but the low-quality is. I don't know. Sometimes it's just hard to tell. But it's going out, and I file that away. I file that as, you know, winning. And a couple of early emails rolling in. Supreme Court idea coming from Kyle in Kentucky Stan. Now, I know this will never happen, but I've been thinking about this. And by the way, last night they swore it, Amy Tony's parrot. And, of course, no mask for Nitwit Nero because he thinks that he's immune now. Shh. Don't anybody tell Nitwit Nero about the study out of Mary Olby Engeland that shows antibodies as declining significantly. Over in the UK, they did a survey of 365,000 adults in England, and they just used a finger stick test. And, between June 20th and September the 28th, the number of people with COVID antibodies declined by 26.5%. Yeah. And among other results out of that story, as the Wall Street Journal reports it, the results also suggested that people who didn't display symptoms were likely to lose detectable antibodies before those who had showed symptoms. The study, conducted by Imperial College in London and the Ipsos Mori Polling Organization, was funded by the British government, which announced the results and published the study on Monday night, last night. The results haven't been reviewed by other experts. It hasn't been peer-reviewed. Mm-hmm. So, let's understand a couple of basic things. One, doctors still don't know whether antibodies actually make you immune. And anyone who listens to someone like, say, COVID Caligula, when he says, they tell me I'm immune now, maybe for a few months, maybe forever, I feel like Superman. And he's so stupid that he doesn't understand the reason he felt like Superman was because of the dexamethasone. And that's the other thing, the monoclonal antibody therapy. Turns out that's a bust. I think it was Eli Lilly announcing they were halting their study because it doesn't do a damn thing for people who are already significantly ill with the dondemic. They say that maybe it would help people early on who didn't have it too bad to maybe keep them from going to the hospital, but that is certainly not established either. So, yeah. But what does seem fairly clear out of this English study is that there ain't going to be no herd mentality, as Corona Claudius referred to it. And I think we all probably already knew that. There won't be any herd immunity because, realistically speaking, there can be no herd immunity without a vaccine. And there's also not one of those. So it's not inspiring, this English study. Now, young people lost antibodies more slowly than people 75 and over. The 18 to 24-year-olds had a decline in antibodies of 14.9%. The 29% drop was between people 75 was among people 75 and over. And apparently what they are figuring out is that the antibodies decline over a roughly 6 to 12 month period of time. So anyway, I got away from my initial point, because the initial point was the note that Kyle from Kentucky Stand sent. And what that boils down to is, now I know this will never happen, but I've been thinking about this. If Biden wins and we get a majority in the Senate and keep the House, which is looking ever more likely, Biden and the Dems should announce they're expanding the Supreme Court, and the first two nominees of the new positions are Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I realize that Joe probably won't do this, but I hope he does, not only because it's necessary, but for the entertainment value of the right-wingers freaking out. We could add two more younger justices later in my plan, but just a thought. I understand that, and Kyle, I'm not being disagreeable just to be disagreeable. I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. I'm not crazy about it, because I don't want any justices appointed to the Supreme Court younger or older than 13. Okay, I'm being a little bit facetious. But you'll notice that has been the game with these Republicans going all the way back to the reign of error with a dim leader. You appoint the jurisprudential equivalent of pimply-faced teenagers to the court so that they can fuck America for 60 years, generations upon generations upon generations. I mean, that's why Amy Toney's parrot is 48 years old, has been 3 years actually being a judge, and before that was probably spent as much time being a handmaid as she did being a law professor. Okay? And just as an addendum here, it is the right of the Congress to establish the size of the Supreme Court of the United States. So you just can't do it. So when Kyle says Biden, the Dems should announce they're expanding the Supreme Court, what that actually means is a bill has to originate in one of the two houses of Congress, get past there, go to the other one, get past there, and then go to the president's desk for signature. So that's how that process would work. In fact, the last time it was done that way was during the Civil War, when all the nasty, hateful, vicious Southern members of Congress were not in D.C., and they set the size of the Supreme Court at 9 by, again, congressionally passed and signed into law statute. So bear that in mind. But put me down as supporting the expansion of the Supreme Court. Because, frankly, I'm not crazy about being under the thumb of any particular religion, and right now we are, as far as the Supreme Court is concerned. Wait, Kyle adds, you mean the virus isn't just disappearing? But the asshole in chief said we were rounding the turn and it would be gone soon, and everyone was learning to live with no. I like that, Jimmy, earning an early cowbell. New rule for the SCOTUS, Supreme Court. All Republican-appointed justices must wear white robes. That's good. That's good. And he already has. Albert pointing out, get ready to sacrifice some rubber chickens to the goddess of irony. Associate Justice Clarence Slappy Pubes on the Coke Can Thomas swore in new Associate Justice Amy Toney's parrot. You know, now we have to change the hashtag from Judge Handmaid to hashtag Justice Handmaid. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you ever so kindly for the challenge last night. That's much appreciated. Herd Mentality, Lee in New York, says it does exist. Herd Mentality is called a Trump rally. Well, herd mentality does exist. It's the herd immunity that's not so much. On June the 20th, going back to the English study real quick, 6% of the population had antibodies. It's down to 4.4% on September 28th. And At the end of September, only 9% of the people displayed antibodies in London. It was 1.6% in the least affected region, the southwest of Merry Old England. Let's get this real clear. There will be no herd immunity. You know, we achieved herd immunity with polio because of the polio vaccine. We achieved herd immunity with smallpox because of the smallpox vaccine. We achieved herd immunity with the measles because of the measles vaccine. Now, in a community such as ours that has big functioning primate brains, we understand that there's a pattern established here. That you have to have a vaccine if you want to have herd immunity. Steve in New York pointing out, turning the corner, we already are turning the corner. What the orange cancer didn't tell you is that we turned the corner and are heading right into a brick wall. I like to think of it more as, you know, if you turn a corner, okay, let's say you're walking this way and you turn left, and you go a little in, you turn left again, you turn another corner, then you turn another corner, and son of a gun, through the magic of geography and geometry and math and probably a higher level basket weaving, you're right back where you started again. Ooh! Funny how that works. Yes, Earther. Blob Clincade of the Clan Clincade. Stop that. And there's no cowbell for any of that. Kyle said, I know how it works. I just assume everyone else did, too. Sorry if I made an assumption. I shouldn't have. But about ramming through Justice Handmaid, Randy Rhodes said today she thought it was because McConnell has given up on Trump and this is his last gasp effort to play to the base to win the Senate and or cement his legacy. I mean, that's as reasonable an idea as any. But I think it has a lot more to do with just being a... Well, remember, she was put on the Seventh Circuit to keep a woman of color off of the Seventh Circuit. Okay? I mean, think about that. Poor Barack Obama appointed Merrick Garland when it would have been much better to have appointed a woman of color. And he did it thinking that might actually get Merrick Garland confirmed. But no. No, of course not. Mm-mm. Not at all. This as well. Blob! Yes, the goddess of irony has been in rare form as of late, and we experienced some of that last night when Sparky and Steve were in the chat room doing their bust Monty Python routine on the eve of John Cleese's birthday. Cleese is given the credit for creating Monty Python, and he's 82 years young today. Then there's Robert E. Slurry Murray. Goodbye, Bob. Wonder how many reverse pineapples he's had in hell so far, Bob Murray. Yeah, none, because there's no such thing as hell, but never mind that. Robert E. Slurry Murray, who used aggressive acquisition tactics that bordered on antitrust violations to help build his company, Murray Energy Corp. Murray died Sunday in St. Clairsville, Ohio. Oh, what a coincidence. Donald Trump campaigned twice in St. Clairsville in 2016, and this is apparently where Trump jumped on the coal train. Slurry Murray donated millions of dollars to the Republican candidates and gave the Trump campaign $300,000 in 2016 to help build the Trump-tanic. On August 14th, 2012, Murray hosted Mitt Romney at Murray Energy's Century Coal Mine in Bealsville, Ohio. I remember it well. The miners were forced to attend the rally without pay as Murray closed the mine that day and told the miners it was in their best interest to attend the event. I don't even think they got to... Did they have to show up dirty? Did they have to show up with, like, coal dust-smudged faces and shit? Something makes me think they did. Robert E. Murray also forced the employees of his company to give 1% of their salary to the company's political action committee. Bob Murray denied global warming, even though he practically invented it with all of his reducing of environmental oversight and constant lobbying to have environmental regulations rolled back, ruled back. Ironically, Robert Slurry Murray had severe scarring of lung tissue, which contributed to his death less than a week after he retired. Get this. This anti-government asshole, while keeping the coal train running, railed against every government regulation and special benefit that might have been afforded to his workers. Yes, this hypocrite had the nerve to file an application for black lung benefits with the U.S. Department of Labor. You may recall we covered that a couple of weeks back. But endlessly disputed claims filed by his minors for black lung benefits and was an advocate against federal regulations intended to reduce black lung. Good riddance, Robert Slurry Murray, and I hope you don't mind mining the mountains in hell. Personally, I think he should be buried in the Crandall Canyon mine in Utah, but that's me. Then there was Clarence Thomas swearing in Amy Scalia Cloney Barrett, even after her written opinion in a circuit court case stating that employees using the N-word did not create a hostile work environment. What's that, Giraffrey? Giraffrey says, can you say Uncle Tom? Well, yes, Jeffrey, I can definitely say Uncle Clarence Thomas. This has been Joey's Journal for Trump-tanic Tuesday, the 27th day of October, with Giraffrey being a doubting Thomas of the legitimacy of this latest Supreme Court judge. Well, increase the court to 15 and make every case 9-6 and let Amy Cloney Barrett, you know, after we were talking about the self-cloning predatory crawfish that are digging into a Belgian cemetery, that Cloney kind of works well with our new justice, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. It does. Hey, thanks for getting us started. Jeremy jumping in, and Jeremy just turned $5 into 10, assuming that there's 95 more bucks out there to meet Darlene's challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Kyle noting, everything Trump touches dies. I hate to give credit to a Republican for anything, but Rick Wilson titled his book this, and he's 100% correct, with Flavio noting, he tells an average of 23 lies a day. I can't believe a thing he says. If he said the sky was blue, I'd have to look outside and check. If he said the sky was blue, what you do is you walk outside and make sure you're carrying an umbrella. Herd immunity, the AstraZeneca Oxford University vaccine in phase 2 trials, Flavio says, is looking promising because it provokes an equally robust immune reaction among the young and the elderly. The Guardian reporting today, the phase 2 trials... It's the Guardian. The phase 2 trials have shown that people over the age of 56 and some over 70 produce the same sort of antibody response as younger volunteers. Whether older people would be protected has always been a key question for the vaccines being developed. The body's natural immune system and therefore its ability to fight any virus weakens with age, which is why the COVID death rate rises in older people. All we got is hope. And that's kind of where we are for the next 7 days, too, isn't it? Can you believe it? We're here. 1 week. Less than 1 week. By this time next week, we will be talking about how long it will be before early results start rolling in. And it is going to be a tense and stressful time. Without a doubt. And this would be a good time to review if I still have it there. Yes, I do still have it. In these states, the absentee ballots are processed the instant they arrive, or at least upon receipt. Arizona, Georgia, Minnesota, Nevada, Alaska, Colorado, the District of Columbia, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Massachusetts, Montana, Nebraska, New Jersey, New York, South Dakota, Tennessee, Utah, Virginia, and Washington. On the other hand, everything will have been processed before Tuesday in Florida, Iowa, Michigan, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Ohio, Arkansas, California, Connecticut, Delaware, Kentucky, Stan, Louisiana, Stan, Maine, Maryland, Missouri, Stan, New Mexico, North Dakota, Stan, Oklahoma, Stan, Oregon, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Stan, Texas, Vermont, Texas, Stan, Vermont, West Virginia, Stan, and Wyoming, Stan. On Election Day, ballots will be processed in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, as well as Alabama and Mississippi, Stan. So it is possible, remember, he has to win at least, Nitwit Nero has to win at least one out of three between Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. Well, all of the absentee ballots will have been counted in Michigan before Election Day. They will be counted on Election Day in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. And therein lies, as the saying goes, the rub. Because Pennsylvania, well, you recall last week that the Supreme Court, by a 4-4 decision, which meant the tie went to the winner below, decided to let stand a decision by the Supreme Court of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that said that ballots that arrived up to 3 days after the election could still be counted. Oddly enough, in a similar case, the decision, instead of being 4-4, was 5-3 in Wisconsin, where Democrats had said, listen, you gotta keep counting the ballots. And those five wise souls said, no, we don't. We want Donald Trump to have a second term. Because all that bullshit about putting politics aside and just judging things on the law, yeah, if you didn't notice, we were lying. Because we are purely political animals on the right-wing side of the Supreme Court, and we weren't going to do that twice. And now the Republicans are trying to get the case reopened in Pennsylvania to keep those ballots from being counted. Funny how if they expect to win anything, the only way they can do it is by not counting votes, but, well, here we are. Exactly. Kyle says the court is trying to give him Wisconsin. One can only hope that, he only won Wisconsin by less than a percentage point. And then, of course, we have to remember the pernicious effects of good old Jill fucking Stein. Mm-hmm. But what is particularly telling out of that list that I was sharing with you a moment ago, the ballots will have been processed in Arizona and in Minnesota and in Georgia. So there won't be much to piss and moan about, at least not legitimately. So we'll probably know who the winner of those states are on election night. And Georgia is so close that Joe Biden did the unthinkable today. He went and campaigned in Georgia. The only thing that would be more bizarre, more tectonically, titanically surprising is if he had gone and campaigned in Alabama. And he chose a genuinely historic and inspiring place to do his campaigning, he went to Warm Springs, Georgia, to recall the memory of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and talked about how when FDR died at Warm Springs, one mourning American said, "I didn't know him, but he knew me." Because Franklin Delano Roosevelt had bent the entirety of his being and his will and his purpose and his energy toward helping people not in his class, you know, the obscenely, embarrassingly rich class, but in the working and struggling class. And also, and I didn't catch anyone pointing this out because, well, I guess people in the multimillionaires in the for-profit media don't have time to think about this. But there was a further irony to Joe Biden campaigning in Warm Springs, Georgia today. Because it was in Warm Springs, Georgia, the little polio-stricken boy from the south side of the Tennessee River in northwest Alabama got the desperately needed therapy that was required for him to go on and have a meaningful life. And, of course, how meaningful that life is, it's kind of like the time person of the year selection. It ain't always somebody who's, it's not the best or the most popular. It's the person who's had the most impact. Adolf Hitler, for instance, was Time's Man of the Year at one point. Well, meaning is in the eyes of the beholder. And that little boy, who for all intents and purposes had his life saved in Warm Springs, Georgia, well, his first name was Addison, and his last name is McConnell. And for some reason, people call him Mitch. Yeah. But Georgia is that close. And bear in mind that no state, or not, not, not no state, bear in mind that Georgia has not voted for a Democratic nominee for president, I think, since they sent native son James Earl Carter to the White House in 1976. I hope not. I hope not. But Kyle says, oh, fuck, here we go, 2000 all over again. I hope not. There's still a chance that this could be a landslide. And if it's a landslide, Nitwit Nero's going to have a hard time complaining that it was taken from him. If you've got 5 or 10 million people who chose the other guy instead of you, it's pretty clear that America hates your damn guts. And there's never been a more polarizing president than this monstrosity. Other evidence of how close things are, as Steve points out, Steve in New York, Kamala Harris going to Texas. Ordinarily, there's no reason to do that. But this year, there's a reason to do it. And curiously, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, almost stood up on his hind legs recently. You know, he's been obsequiously servile in regard to Nitwit Nero, But he did observe that not one single voter has been swayed to Trump's side by all the Hunter Biden horse shit. Now, he's not up for re-election this year. But when you're a member of the United States Senate, you're always running. And a Texas that turned blue, my God almighty, it would almost be as though Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, could hear the bats fluttering around his ears. Oh, I'm not predicting a landslide, Kyle. I'm saying that's the one thing that for sure saves us. James in Illinois says, Wisconsin, Michigan, and or Pennsylvania. This is assuming he doesn't lose anything else he won in 2016. That's true. Can you imagine it? Dare to dream. Dare to dream that he loses Texas. Dare to dream that he loses Georgia. Dare to dream that he loses Florida. There may not, because, you know, Florida's vote will likely be done counting, or very close to it, by the end of the night. Not even 1 week. I mean, a week from right now, it'll practically be done all over but the counting. And remember, Geezer discussed us all, said, we're going to win New York, too. Lee in New York says, I heard that New York validates the outer envelope when received. The ballot itself is not processed until after the polls close. If the mail-in voter wants to vote on election day, the ballot is allowed. Then the mail-in ballot is found and discarded. I believe it's pre-processing that's occurred. The actual tally has not begun in most states. Well, we're talking about the New York Times here. Okay, and there it says, when mail and absentee ballots are pre-processed. Upon receipt in New York, pre-processed before Election Day, Florida, Iowa, Michigan, North Carolina, and pre-processed on Election Day. So, thanks for the clarification, Lee. Lee noting, one more week, hope in one hand, absentee ballot in the other. And you know what? I ask, why haven't you turned it in yet? Running out of time. But not out of time. Barack Obama made that abundantly clear, speaking today in Florida, saying, right now, you've got two different ways to vote. You can vote by absentee, mail-in ballot, or you can early vote in Florida. And he also took a couple of shots at Nitwit Nero, and verbal shots, of course, because Nitwit Nero got really pouty, I guess, yesterday or the day before and said, oh, these people who say Barack Obama is so good looking, I never saw it. They say he's such a good speaker, I never thought so. Well, nobody's going to accuse you of being a stunning orator. Although it's entirely possible you may be considered by history as a master debater. Yeah, here's Barack Obama in Florida today.
But I did hope for the country's sake that he might show some interest in taking the job seriously. But he didn't. He hasn't shown any interest in doing the work or helping anybody but himself and his friends, or treating the presidency as anything more than a reality show that can give him the attention that he craves, and he does crave attention. This week, with all everything that's happening, you know what he brought up? He was fussing about the crowd size at the inauguration again, saying his was bigger. Who is thinking about that right now?
Who does that?
Nobody except him. But the rest of us have had to live with the consequences. More than 225,000 people in this country are dead. More than 100,000 small businesses have closed. 500,000 jobs are gone in Florida alone. Think about that. And what's his closing argument? That people are too focused on COVID. He said this at one of his rallies. COVID, 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 he's complaining. He's jealous of COVID's media coverage.
Jesus.
If he had been focused on COVID from the beginning, cases wouldn't be reaching new record highs across the country this week.
I think that's the first cowbell we've ever given Barack Obama. Who says that?
If we were focused on COVID now, the White House wouldn't be having its second outbreak in a month. The White House. Let me say this. I lived in the White House for a while. You know, it's a controlled environment. You can take some preventive measures in the White House to avoid getting sick. Except this guy can't seem to do it. He's turned the White House into a hot zone. Some of the places he holds rallies have seen new spikes right after he leaves town. And over the weekend, his chief of staff said, and I'm quoting here, I'm not making this up. His chief of staff on a news program says, we're not going to control the pandemic. He just said this. Yes, he did. And yes, we noticed you're not going to control the pandemic. Listen, winter is coming. They're waving the white flag of surrender. Florida, we can't afford four more years of this. That's why we've got to send Joe Biden to the White House. Because we cannot afford this kind of incompetence and disinterest. 12 years ago, when I chose vice president, I didn't know Joe all that well. We served in the Senate together. I noticed, by the way, one of my great friends, Bill Nelson, see, I haven't seen Bill in a while, so that's why. Plus, he's wearing a mask, but yep, one of the great senators from Florida. And Joe and I served together with him. And, you know, I had a lot of friends in the Senate, but Joe and I wasn't the closest person. But he and I came from different places. We came from different generations. But I quickly came to admire Joe as a man who learned early to treat everybody he meets with dignity and respect.
I just did that because it's refreshing to hear him talk and remember what an actual president sounds like. Kind of something, isn't it? Upbeat, fact-based, inspiring, encouraging. Meanwhile, what happens in Michigan? In Lansing, Nitwit Nero says, 3 weeks in, Joe's shot. Let's go, Kamala. Are you ready? He's speculating on the murder of his presidential opponent. It's where we are. That's who he is. Go figure. But make no mistake, Nitwit Nero could not spell stochastic terrorism if you spotted him the entire word stochastic and every letter of terrorism except the M at the end. He couldn't spell it, but he damn well knows what it is, and he knows what he's doing, because he said that in Michigan, where a cadre of Trump voters plotted to kidnap and murder the governor of Michigan. Thank you, David in South Carolina, Stan, and Ralphs both for sending that along. It is, it's damned well shocking. Don't take my word for it. Here it is.
That's why they talk about the 20.
Hold on. Make sure the audio is good. And go.
That's why they're talking about the. That's why they talk about the 25th Amendment, right? 3 weeks. 3 weeks in. Joe shot. Let's go, Kamala. You ready? Most liberal person in the Senate. She makes Bernie Sanders look like a serious conservative. This.
Yeah. Forgive me, but that's more than a little bit chilling. And in point of fact, there's another little mini movie out from the Lincoln Project. And that in its own right is terrifying. It's just a 60-second affair. And what it boils and it's just a little movie of a mother going in and waking up her young son as they as she listens to election night returns. The name of the short film is Good Night America.
Me to wake you and tell you what happened in the election.
Who won?
Trump. Trump won.
But I thought you could only be president 2 times.
Not anymore.
Stop him, or it will never stop. Vote him out.
The Lincoln Project is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And, of course, that is unpaid product placement, courtesy of, you know, the horn. I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready for the punchline, the snapper, as Mark Twain called them. I thought that was, like, set next week. But no, as the crowd chants 4 more years, 4 more years, we find out that that is the election night in November of 2025, when a doddering old man, now well on his way to senility, wins a third term because why? Because the two-term limit constitutional amendment has been repealed, or because perhaps he's just declared that it doesn't apply to him, because dictatorial fiat works that way. Or maybe Amy Grin and Barrett and Brat and Sammy shoot the black kid running away 30 yards away with no gun in the back of the head. Alito and Ann's boy Neil and old Balls and Strikes Roberts decided we don't need presidential term limits after all. Yeah, November 2024. Sorry, I was thinking inauguration January 2025. But you're right, Randy, November 2024. That's chilling. Which, in a from a philosophical standpoint, is kind of interesting because I have argued, I have long argued, that is the single most anti-democratic amendment to the Constitution that there is. The 22nd Amendment. Remember, it was passed by a bunch of pissed-off Republicans who were still butthurt over having their asses handed to them by FDR so many times. And so they imposed an artificial term limit on the presidency. It was ratified on February the 27th, 1951, by a useless Republican, an otherwise useless Republican Congress. And I'm still not sure that I approve of the 22nd Amendment. But the import, the upshot of the Lincoln Project ad is that when it disappears, well, as they said, stop him or it will never stop. What continues to just bedevil me is how there can be enough people for this to be even perceived as a close race. What the fuck is wrong with so many of our fellow Americans? What is it? And I suspect if we talk about it later, it will come to some sort of conclusion. But what is it that gets them out in their hundreds to run up and down the roads with these Trump flags? Honking and hooting and grunting. He has done not a goddamn thing for them, except make them feel better about their, what, their whiteness? I don't know. Now, Randy in PA says, I disagree. It was the only way we got rid of Bush Jr. I don't think so. I think you could... George W. Bush had proven to be, by the end of his second term, such a disaster. I think not only did Barack Obama beat John McCain, I think it's possible if John McCain had run against George W. Bush, he might have unseated Bush in the primary. And I'm absolutely convinced that had Barack Obama run against George W. Bush in 2008, he would have thumped George W. Bush. I'm still not happy about the 22nd Amendment because I'm not happy whenever anyone's democratic choice is taken from them. But there's something sort of obligatory Star Trek reference-y about that Lincoln Project ad because it reminds me of whichever episode it was where the old Starfleet dude had become a sort of propped-up figurehead, Hitler-esque leader. Because, well, there is not enough character and there is not enough courage in the entire Republican Party to ever stand up to Donald Trump. I think that new and different kind of Republican, you know, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, proved that to us with his little telephone recording. And David in South Carolina stand pointing out Kamala's heading to Texas later this week. Yeah, I know McCain ran against Bush in 2000, Steve. What I'm saying is that America was so sick of George W. Bush in 2008 that if McCain had, if Bush had been able to run again, if there had not been a 22nd Amendment, McCain probably could have beaten Bush in 2008 in a primary contest. And as it was, if he could not, if he could have run again, I think Barack Obama would have thumped him. As to Kamala Harris, Kyle says, one, no, she's not the most liberal. Two, when we have a new attorney general, how many different offenses of making terroristic threats can one person have against him? And three, get this fucker out of office! That was Patterns of Force, by the way, Lee reminds us. And John Gill was heavily medicated. Familiarer and familiarer. Brother Deacon Asa says, going back to the COVID discussion earlier, may I interject about the whole herd immunity business, Bob? Let's all remember that there is, in fact, a flu vaccine and has been available for years and years. Let's all remember that everyone on this planet, save for the newborn, have already had the flu. Yet there's no such thing as herd immunity against the flu virus. What makes anybody think that we'll somehow magically develop herd immunity against the coronavirus? Especially for the feeble-minded Trumpanzees who think COVID-19 is just like the flu! Yeah. And of course, a lot of that has to do with mutation. Because viruses mutate very easily. And Brother Deacon Ace is absolutely right. There's no herd immunity against the flu. I had my shot in September, and so I guess I'm good through March. And then from, like, around here, oh, I guess March and April, I just need to sit tight and not go anywhere. Oh, and by the way, Randy letting us know, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says he's lucky to be alive after trying to fool Mother Nature by not wearing a mask at a Trump super spreader event. Yeah, but that doesn't mean he ain't going to vote for him. And that really is where the rubber meets the road in these instances. Over at BuzzFeed today, they had a story about Patriot Front. Who's Patriot Front? Patriot Front is a gang of white supremacist thugs, and they formed out of the ashes of the groups in Charlottesville falling apart, those neo-Nazis. Jane Litvinenko, reporting for BuzzFeed, said BuzzFeed News has received a cache of hundreds of messages exchanged by Patriot Front members on Rocket.chat, an encrypted group messaging app. In logs of the chats from all from this year, around 280 members of the group discussed grandiose goals, creating a white ethno state from the existing United States. The group wants to expel immigrants, people of color, and Jews, remaking the fabric of America. The messages reveal a sophisticated network of extremists who are training for violence. You'll read if you go over to BuzzFeed. The men who believe the United States is a nation that belongs only to white people wear uniforms made up of bomber jackets, face coverings, and beige khakis. They mandate weight loss and intense workouts. Well, I guess they've actually seen the footage of some of those militia members, huh? And they regularly practice hand-to-hand combat. Some openly call themselves supremacist and revere Hitler and Mussolini. Thomas Rousseau, the leader of the group, said, "It does not matter what people personally believe about it. Casting a ballot is a submissive gesture to legitimize tyranny. It is fundamentally amoral. It is done as an insult to the nation's cause and the organization. I feel like Jews, immigrants, and Muslims, he misspelled Muslims, the supremacist did, are a malicious threat to the United States and its economy. That's why the people are in current state of civil unrest. They're causing themselves to be shot by the police and making the split even bigger. That was Vincent in Kentucky Stan. I feel if there's going to be a huge race war and us whites will come out on top. How do you feel about this statement? Oh, it's a disgusting little foray into the weird and the sick. I cannot stand idly by while my people fall into disrepair, despair, degeneracy, and ethnic replacement. That's Anthony in Illinois. Or Logan in Tennessee, who says, at the core of my position are these principles. The categorical rejection of the notion of equality. The categorical rejection of universal democracy. Explicit in-group preference. Remember the name, Patriot Front. And, of course, Thomas Rousseau has been arrested for something because we have his mugshot in his little striped scrubs. And this, by the way, a reminder, is the anniversary of the Tree of Life massacre at in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh. And in the aftermath of that, just a few months after the Tree of Life massacre, the Ojave Zedek Synagogue, which also serves as an LGBTQ center in Vermont, they'd been reporting on this gang of punks and thugs, the Patriot Front. Well, a few months, Rabbi Amy Small of the synagogue said, a few months before the incident on our property, one of our synagogue members told me that on a nearby road she saw Patriot Front posters pasted on the streetlights and street signs, one after the next. She was beside herself with fear. Then, later on in February, the rabbi said, as I was approaching the synagogue, I saw the Patriot Front poster pasted onto our front sign. It's very jarring in a time when I know there's so much hate. So the police took down the poster. And the police performed a perfunctory investigation. No one got arrested. And Rabbi Smalls organized a rally on the steps of City Hall in Burlington. All of a sudden, she says, this big pickup truck came loudly down the street honking. It had Patriot Front signs all over it. I saw all the officers that had been standing right near where I was go running toward it, but by then it tore away. Just raw intimidation. And yes, the leader of Patriot Front, Mr. Rousseau, was at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. And they're paranoid as hell, as BuzzFeed reports. Anthony in Illinois said, while we were sparring, a van full of Baptists from the area pulled up and piled out. They had a bunch of young boys with them. They stood there with their father and watched on as we fought each other in masculine competition. We got to show those boys something that they won't see elsewhere, in a healthy dose of masculinity that is otherwise shunned nowadays. We make the change in the nation that we want to see, men. Seamen? Seamen? Really? Well, it's nice to know the goddess of irony is aware of these goons, too. Jeremy in Vermont says, I know these fuckers are deadly serious, but I still can't help but laugh out loud when we hear their beliefs and goals out loud. No, it's not what we've become. It's what we've always been. The death yam just made it normal again. Fuck. Yep. Manly semen. They've also been sharing videos of themselves on Twitter, Telegram, TikTok. One of their propaganda videos got a million views. BuzzFeed questioned them about it, and they pulled the video down saying, hate speech is not permitted on TikTok. Well, you did. But they also note that Twitter, Telegram, and Rocket.chat have not responded to requests for comment. And according to Cassie Miller at the Southern Poverty Law Center, Patriot Front is among the most prolific spreaders of white power propaganda in the United States. They've flyered over 1,000 places around the country this year alone. Jesus. Over at the Anti-Defamation League, Carla Hill says, in the United States, they lead white supremacist propaganda distributions, Patriot Front does. Rousseau got arrested in Texas for stickering county property there. They were fined and released. Yeah. Just, you know, pay attention. Pay attention. And by the way, if you haven't seen it, right after Amy Cloney Grinnan Barrett was sworn in, sworn at, she sidled right up to Donald Trump, both of them, no mask anywhere in sight. CBS News White House correspondent Mark Knoller got the photo. All that judicial independence? Yeah, not so much. And, of course, they had a super spreader event at the White House to mark it. Because, of course, and she chose to come out onto the balcony and stand there with him. She's going to be a nightmare. Make no mistake. Oh, and since it is Titanic Tuesday. Oh, wait. Vermont, Jeremy says it's snowing right now. Well, there's another fuck. But then again, Jeremy likes to snowmobile, so maybe that's a good thing. My question as to how people continue to cling to Trump, Lee answers, how Trump holds his followers. I think you missed the power of the evangelical preacher. Trump's talent is to rile up a crowd, just like a preacher. He promises eventual success, but does nothing to deliver it. Sound familiar yet? And don't forget that the followers give money, because God needs money. Even in Star Trek, they can ask, why does God need a starship? That's exactly where I was going, Lee. You know me all too well. Yet people make the preachers rich and do not question. These people lack critical analysis skills. They do not ask, where did God come from? They do not see a bad economy when they become unemployed. They believe Trump kept the virus away when they have COVID-19. They believe the wall was built and is beautiful and Mexico paid for it. Facts are lies. Trump's and the preacher's words are true. If they're changed next week, they were true and still will be true. Always and forever. What year is this? Lee asks. 1984? And Freight Train Frank answering, Trump supporters, folks support Trump because they're still angry about Obama. Their anger is not dissipating. Well, racism seldom does. And as to herd mentality, Steve notes, I think many people see the term herd mentality and they think it sounds so science-y. And because of that, it must be true. Science! Yes. But like I said, it is Titanic Tuesday, and I'm going to add one more. And usually Titanic Tuesday is reserved for Republicans, libertarians, maggots, Trumpansies, etc. But sometimes we run across one from allegedly our side of the aisle, and note the use of the term allegedly. Last night, Jimmy Kimmel invited Bill Maher onto his program. And I know there are some people who still think, for reasons passing my understanding, that Bill Maher shits ice cream. I got over Bill Maher a long time ago. Once in a while, he's funny. But I've been suspicious of him ever since he was wallowing around with Anthrax Coulter. But last night, he kind of jumped the shark. Because he was brought on for his political acumen. And he told Jimmy Kimmel that it's the fault of the loser Dems that Amy Coney Barrett is on the court now. And he said the following. The Democratic plan for the Supreme Court was Ruth Bader Ginsburg doesn't die. And that's why they're such a loser party. I vote for them, but they don't know how to do politics. And he said that Ruth Bader Ginsburg should have taken the hint from Barack Obama when he invited her to the White House, and that was a hint for her to retire. Who knows what that was? She should have taken the hint. I mean, as great as she was in many ways, that really put us in a bad place because, as I keep trying to say on my show, power begets power. When you lose power, you keep losing it. That's where we are now. We lose presidential elections. They appoint justices. Now the Supreme Court's 6-3. That's going to go on for a very long time. If the election winds up in the court, who do you think you're going to go with? We saw what happened with Bush v. Gore. That's what I mean. You lose power and then you lose it again. And then where Justice Ginsburg was concerned, he added, it's not like her death was a shock. She was 100 and had cancer 1,000,000 times. She was a great justice, but she should have quit. And his point was that, get this, she should have resigned from the court in Barack Obama's second term. Now, I'm here for 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week. And have been for, well, we're somewhere around 18 years. Something like that. 17. I don't know. 15 and change in this format alone. And I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember those 4 years of Barack Obama's second term where Democrats controlled the Senate. Because, see, that's where the problem lies. Because it wasn't simply because Fat Tony became Fat Dead Tony in February of 2016. If Fat Dead Tony had become Fat Dead Tony in February of 2015, or 14, or 13, Mitch McConnell would have still been there making up some bogus reason. Well, y'all do understand that Barack Obama is one of them people. I mean, wore a tan suit and everything. You know, there's a long-standing constitutional tradition that presidents who are three-fifths of a president and wear tan suits should not be allowed to appoint more than one or two Supreme Court justices tops. In short, Mitch McConnell would have held that seat open hell or high water. Just like he kept a seat from being filled in the 7th United States Circuit Court of Appeals so that a black woman would not get on the court. And he could save it for a nice lily white, at that point in time, 45-year-old from Notre Dame Law School who had spent more time being a fucking handmaid than she had spent being a judge. But not according to political sage Bill Maher. She was 100 and had cancer a million times. She was a great justice, but she should have quit. And just left a seat open. And then there would have been two seats to fill when Donald Trump became president. And wouldn't that have just been lovely? And then there would have been the retirement of Anthony Kennedy when he realized that maybe some information was about to come out about his boy and being the loan officer at Deutsche Bank for Donald Trump and helping to launder some ungodly amounts of money from Russian punks, crooks, thugs, and oligarchs. And well, we'd be right in the same place we are now. We just would have gotten there a lot fucking quicker. They call me crazy, but when it comes to intellectual heft, I am far more likely to agree with Ruth Bader Ginsburg than, you know, Bill Maher. She hung on as long as she could for a reason. She made it abundantly clear that she wanted whoever was inaugurated on January 20th, 2021, to be the person who chose her replacement, even if that was Trump. But that decorum and tradition demanded it. And as I said back when she passed away, it would have been wonderful if she could have lasted until January 22nd, 2021, and that we could have had Biden to replace her. But if she had to die, she died at just about the right time. Because while the Democrats couldn't make the idea of blowing off Merrick Garland stick between February and November of 2016, this, coupled with the Addison McConnell's bullshit excuse for jamming her onto the court, managed to make this a real election issue. This actually makes more sense than anything Bill Maher had to say. The power begets power business, I don't argue with. But it's all a question of how you manage the power and how you exercise it. And he went on to say, create what may be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Maher told Kimmel that he expects Trump to lose the Electoral College and he expects him to lose the popular vote. And then said it's impossible to imagine Trump losing and then saying, well, we fought the good fight, but the best man won. And because he is clever and he is quick and he is occasionally funny, he said he doesn't do losing. Other than three marriages, three casinos, four magazines, an airline, a football league, a charity, steaks, vodka, and a university, he's never lost anything, so he's not going to go gently into the night. That's what I worry about. Jesus. So, well, that's what Titanic Tuesday is for. Titanic intellect. Meanwhile, you know, you heard the clip Obama saying that he had Trump has no closing argument.
COVID, COVID, COVID. Moshe, Moshe, Moshe.
Well, Joe Biden does have one. When he was in Warm Springs earlier today, Joe Biden said the divisions in our nation are getting wider. Anger and suspicion are growing. Our wounds are getting deeper, and many wonder, has it gone too far? Have we passed the point of no return? Has the heart of this nation been turned to stone? I don't think so. I refuse to believe it. I know this country, I know our people, and I know we can unite and heal this nation. He went on and said, Warm Springs is a good place to talk about hope and healing. This is where Franklin Roosevelt came to use the therapeutic waters to rebuild himself. Stricken by the polio virus in 1921, he suffered from paralysis. Like so many other Americans in those pre-vaccine decades, FDR longed to live an independent life, a life that wasn't defined by his illness. To him and to so many others facing physical challenges, Warm Springs offered therapy for the body and, I might add, for the soul. He promoted empathy, courage, optimism, and lifted us out of the Great Depression, defeating tyranny, saving democracy. God and history have called us to this moment and to this mission. With our voices and our votes, we must free ourselves from the forces of darkness, from the forces of division, from the forces of yesterday. And then he tied the horrific results of polio to COVID-19. He's got some fine writers. He said, when news of FDR's death went out on the wires, an editor in Chicago turned to his colleagues and said, clear the decks for action. So I say to you today, if you give me the honor of serving as your president, clear the decks for action, for we will act. And I'd just like to point out that if we had been preaching FDR instead of using the S word that serves as just free campaign fodder to the goddamn right wing and gets the multimillionaires of the for-profit media hopping up and down and hooting like howler monkeys, we might not be in the mess we're in right now. Because I repeat my thesis. Older Americans, and I qualify in that list, can damned well identify with the phrase FDR Democrat, because that's what I was raised as. And this country could damned well use some FDR Democrat policies. A lot of them. Oh, and Darlene pointing out, and maybe Bill Maher should stop smoking pot. LOL. Oh, but he's so clever. Yeah, I guess. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out, Donald Trump is a combo of wrestling and traveling tent show preacher. Yeah, as long as the preacher doesn't have to know anything, anything that's actually in the Bible.
2 Corinthians.
Arthur, the true patriot, Rousseau, you know, from the Patriot Front. The true patriot is the one that wants to dissolve the country. White powder. I want white powder. Does anyone have some? Arthur said, maybe I made that up. Maybe you did. And Darlene says, AOC and Cardi B rhymes, I know. Put FDR back on the map. Long live FDR. Hear, hear. God, yeah, I could still remember years back when Flush Flimball, who by the way has proclaimed that he has a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and no word from Jesus Christ on that yet. I remember years ago when he was blathering about how we needed to take that commie socialist FDR off the dime and put Ronald Reagan on it. No, really. What year is this, asks Terrace. Going back to a previous email. When you're a Christian, it's always 1494. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, Keith, I did see that. It just so happened that I did see that. Keith asking, did you see or hear the MSNBC report done today that was done in McDowell County, West Virginia? They were talking to non-voters and inquiring why they didn't vote. Yeah, I heard, the minute I heard, we sent a reporter to McDowell County, West Virginia, and immediately... I turned into that meme of Captain Picard sitting in the con chair, going, "Oh no, not this shit again!" All right, I think we're back. Never seen us crash in quite that way before. That was fascinating, I guess, in its own way. But anyway, what I was saying is that The PayPal notifications aren't coming through on email very well, but I did check on PayPal, and so lo and behold, we are only $35 away, thanks to Charlene and Kat in Ohio. We're only $35 away from meeting Darlene's challenge. So thank you very kindly, Darlene, for making the challenge. Thank you to Charlene, your sister in the sorority of Leans, and thank you to Kat in Ohio, and thank you to Jeremy. We are now at just $35 to go on Darlene's Titanic Tuesday challenge. That really was weird. It's both interfaces just. But we are back, and that's a good thing. So, anyway, at the halfway mark of the program, this here being a Tuesday and all, let's check in with Brad and Desi, the Green News Report, because, hey, look, another hurricane. My God. Hurricane Zeta. Ginned up in the Gulf of Campeche or somewhere near the Yucatan Peninsula, and is now bearing down on the Gulf Coast again, somewhere between Morgan City, Louisiana, and the Alabama-Mississippi border. The next one, I presume, will be Eta. Let's see, Zeta, Theta, Iota, Kappa, Lambda, Mu, Nu, Omicron. Z? Yeah, I bet we dodge Z, but well, we've never had to get that far. But Brad and Desi do a fantastic job, so let's let them talk about it.
It's Tuesday, October 27, 2020.
This is storm number 27, by the way. 28 is the record, so we're only one away.
Yet another hurricane takes aim at the Gulf Coast.
The winds came with a vengeance, flames and thick smoke darkening the sky.
Yet another round of hurricane-force winds and fires in California and Colorado. Plus,
you both have very different visions on climate change.
Truth and nonsense on climate change at the final presidential debate of 2020.
All of that truth and nonsense straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand back and stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They want to spend $100 trillion. They want to knock down buildings and build new buildings with little, tiny, small windows.
Yes, so you can open them with your little, tiny, small hands. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we are officially out of Greek letters that I know in the alphabet. So where are we now in this record-breaking storm season?
We are now up to Hurricane Zeta, another hurricane for the Gulf of Mexico. It is on track to strike near the Louisiana-Alabama border around Wednesday.
Again?
Yes. We are now into the Greek alphabet because there have been so many storms in this historic 2020 Atlantic hurricane season. Zeta is the earliest 27th named storm in recorded history, arriving a full month earlier than the previous record 27th storm that hit back in 2005. Zeta is the 11th named storm to landfall in the continental United States, and that is a new record for the most U.S. landfalling storms in a single year. And Zeta also sets a new record for Louisiana as the 5th named storm to hit the state in a single season. Mm. That is a very unwelcome new record, I should add.
Poor Louisiana. Let's hope that Zeta may not hit Louisiana after all.
I don't think there's a chance of that, but let's hope that the impacts are minimal.
Okay.
Meanwhile, out west,
two of the largest fires in Colorado's history are burning dangerously close together, and there are fears that they could merge into one gigantic inferno.
Of course they will.
In Colorado, some snow has finally arrived to help firefighters slow the spread of two of the largest wildfires in state history, the Cameron Peak Fire and the East Troublesome Fire, very well named. They're both burning in the same county and could merge. The growing fires have forced the evacuation of thousands of residents and the closure of Rocky Mountain National Park. The three largest fires in Colorado state history have all hit since July of this year.
Still just a coincidence. Just like the, five of the six largest fires in state history out here in California happened to all hit this year?
Yep, and in Southern California, two firefighters have been critically injured, and mandatory evacuations have been ordered for 100,000 residents during a pandemic due to the fast growth of the Silverado Fire that erupted on Monday near Irvine, south of Los Angeles. Nearly the entire state is now facing a new round of extreme fire weather with dangerous hurricane-force winds and extremely low humidity. Utilities cut electricity to thousands across the state so that their equipment didn't spark new fires.
It is late October. How long is this fire season expected to continue?
Fire season's pretty much year-round now, so good luck with guessing that one. Finally, in the final presidential debate of the endless 2020 election, Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden laid out starkly different visions on climate change. Donald Trump has presented no formal plan to address climate change, and indeed plans to further expand domestic fossil fuel extraction, making climate change even worse. Trump again took credit for President Obama's policies that have reduced air and water pollution and carbon emissions, along with the delivery some colorful lies about windows and birds and wind energy and more. Biden pressed his $2 trillion plan to reinvigorate the U.S. economy and create millions of jobs by acting to solve climate change.
$2 trillion?
$2 trillion.
Donald Trump says it's $100 trillion.
And Donald Trump is lying.
Oh.
Biden's plan also includes upgrading the nation's infrastructure and transitioning to clean energy. But the biggest moment of the night was when Biden acknowledged the scientific reality that the U.S. will transition away from fossil fuels.
I would transition from the oil industry, yes.
Oh,
I would
that's
transition.
A big statement.
That is a big statement.
That's a
because
big statement.
I would stop.
Why would you do that?
Because the oil industry pollutes significantly. Oh. Because it has to be replaced by renewable energy over time.
We have that's one maybe final the biggest question. Statement in terms of business. That's the biggest statement.
Okay.
We have to move toward a net zero emissions. The first place to do that by the year 2035 is in energy production. By 2050, totally.
Corporate media portrayed Biden's statement as a gaffe, as opposed to noting the rising costs of Trump's denial as climate impacts accelerate. It was likely the first time that the public heard a national leader be honest about the scientific reality that we must phase out fossil fuels.
It wasn't a gaffe. He was telling the truth. Good for Joe Biden there. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So this is what the truth feels like.
Okay, so we made it through the Green News Report, and just editorially, let me note that there is no such thing as a Louisiana-Alabama border. It does not exist. Just doesn't. But nonetheless, that doesn't change the sheer madness of being up to Zeta in the Greek alphabet. And when does hurricane season end? Does it end at the end of November or the beginning of November? It's kind of like my car inspection sticker. I can never forget it. I can never remember if it ends at the first of the month or the last of the month. But God, if hurricane season ends at the end of November, we may actually get Eta and Iota, maybe even Kappa, Lambda. Mu, Nu, Z, Omicron, Pi. I like Pi. Just got the coolest video from Darlene in Connecticut. Her security camera captured something, and she said, I knew I put that deck up for a reason. Darlene has an owl friend. An owl came to visit her. Which is good, because that means that if you've got an owl who's keeping an eye on the premises at night, the little fuzzy disease-bearing mices and ratses and even creepy crawly snakes and stuff are less likely to be around because those are all tasty owl snacks. Yes. Yeah. Zeta, Eta, Kappa, Lambda, Mu, Nu, Z, Omicron. Wow. It's just astonishing. Oh, and by the way, this is Conversation Radio. And you are welcome to jump in if you've got something you'd like to talk about. New callers are always welcome. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. 304-574-8178 into the same interface. And then toll free from anywhere in North America. Via the stress line, 844-843-4676. And yeah, we got $35 to go to finish Darlene's challenge. Please, let's not leave that just laying around. And then after that, 125 more just to finish, to finish the evening and be even for this here, the final week of October 2020. My God, how did it get? This year has been damnable and feels like so wasted. All right, okay, point taken. James in Illinois says, sure there's a Louisiana-Alabama border. It's called Mississippi.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And not all Titanic Tuesday stories are necessarily earth-shattering. But let's check in Tennistan, where they've got another one of those, and there's something about Republicans, white male Republicans, who are doctors, who something makes them want to be Republican legislators. Maybe it's that Dr. God complex. I don't know. But then the state senate of Tennistan, they got a physician who is a member of the state senate, and his name is Joey Hensley. Mm-hmm. Now, we have a Joey in our community, and I would, believe you me, I would far rather be associated with our Joey, and Giraffery for that matter, than old Joey Hensley of Tennistan. Oh, this story's got everything. Yeah. Opioids. Family values. And banjo music. Because, of course, the State Medical Review Board of Tennistan is investigating Senator Joey Hensley. Now, ain't nobody going to put Joey Hensley, Senator Joey Hensley, in jail because, of course, he's got good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian family values. Yes, yes, yes. How do we know he's got good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian family values? Well, State Senator Joey Hensley of Tennistan is the author of Tennistan's very own Don't Say Gay bill. Yes. He authored the bill in Tennessee that said that teachers can't be talking about, and preferably nobody else can be talking about being of all gay and whatnot. You know, your homosexualism and your Lebanese women's and whatnot. So his credentials are well established. Obviously, he is a longtime follower of strictly heterosexual Jesus, and never mind that whole verse in Galoshes or whatever it is, where it says, "In Christ there is no male nor female." We'll pretend we didn't read that part. But nonetheless, the state senator Joey Hensley of Tennessee, he's a doctor in a small town, in a small county, and by way of explaining his predilection for writing, and my goodness gracious, he is a man right after. No, it's not that good. It's not that good, Brother Deacon Asa. And Brother Deacon Asa just sent me a note. Said, "Please, please, baby Jesus, please, sweet fake baby Jesus, please tell me Senator Joey was caught with a man in his mouth." Not quite, but awfully damned close. Because, among other things, Dr. Joey's lawyer, David Steed, because he has a lawyer, because he needs one, being how the Medical Review Board is kind of after him. He said, well, half of the county are Hensleys. Everyone there knows everyone. We don't, is he talking about that whole, the Old Testament knowing, and Adam knew Eve, and the next thing you know, Cain was killing Abel? I don't know. Half the county of Hensley's, everyone there knows everyone. There were multiple relationships, and the physician-patient relationship was only one and somewhat incidental to the others. And when we get to the somewhat incidental to the others part, that's when the banjo music picks up. because between 2011 and 2018, Dr. Joey Dunn wrote at least 47 prescriptions for controlled substances for a nurse. And no, Brother Deacon, she was a female nurse. But he never had her go through any drug tests. He never checked in to see if maybe she was abusing the opioids or anything. Never bothered to find out if maybe she was selling them down there at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Park or anything. No, that's out in Missouri. And didn't keep particularly meticulous records of the prescriptions that he was writing.
Uh-huh.
And didn't put the prescriptions that he writ for her in her medical record. I mean, she's a nurse and everything, right? She was a nurse. Is the banjo still playing? Good. No, there's no banjo. People in the podcast will be going, I'll be getting emails. Bob, there was no banjo music. No, there's not. We're imagining the banjo music. Ding, 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 ding. Because the nurse that he wrote 47 dope prescriptions for was his second cousin. Because everybody's a Hensley. Everybody, half the county of Hensley. Everyone knows everyone. There are not many people in the county who haven't been to see Dr. Hensley. And she was one of them. And, well, yeah. And she was getting opioid prescriptions, controlled substance prescriptions, and 47 at least of them, and she was his second cousin, and yes, they were having some Tennessee sexy time. Long about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a year ago when Dr. Joey got professional licensing charges filed against him, saying that he violated medical standards over, you know, several years. Among other things, in Tennessee, doctors ain't supposed to write prescriptions for family members, because it's said that the family relationship can obscure a doctor's judgment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because nothing matters as much to good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians in Tennessee as much as family values do. And nothing says family values like writing 47 opioid prescriptions for the second cousin that, you know, you're a fucking. Because, of course. You're my cousin, you're my cousin, you're my cousin. Diddling, ding, ding. Ba-da-long, dong, dong. Bung, bung, bing, dong, ding, dong, ding, dong, ding. Ba-da-ling, ding, 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 ding. Well, I had to prescribe them for my cousins and family members. I'm the only doctor in town. Maybe the only doctor in Tennessee. I ain't sure. And you know, it's not like this comes out. No, this comes straight from the, no kidding, the Nashville Tennessean. And it was yesterday when his lawyer did kind of come around. We fit this as far as we can fit it. He wrote opioid prescriptions for the second cousin that he was having sex with. Mm-hmm. And this all happened when opening statements began there in the medical licensing board. trying his best. You know, when you've got the law, pound on the law. When you've got the facts, pound on the facts. When you've got the table, pound on the... When you've got neither, pound on the table. I don't see good things happening when the opening statement includes the following. There are not many people in the county who haven't been to see Dr. Hensley, and, well, she was one of them. There were multiple relationships, and the physician-patient relationship was only one and somewhat incidental to the others. Mm-hmm. Somewhat incidental. Investigator Brandy Blair said, some of them might have had an office note, the prescriptions, but it did not reflect that hydrocodone was given that day. But a majority of them didn't have any type of documentation whatsoever. And oddly enough, he's from a place I'm familiar with. He's from Hohenwald, Tennessee. Not far from the Alabama state line, and I think some of them Hensleys has actually migrated south of the Tennessee-Alabama line because my landlord, while I was down there for 6 weeks, was in fact a daughter of a Hensley. The best part, of course, was when Dr. Hensley testified in his own behalf and said, oh, I didn't know I'd done anything wrong. When I become a doctor, I really didn't know I was supposed to discriminate against some people. I come back to Hohenwald where I growed up, and I had a lot of relatives and had a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I was supposed to discriminate against people. How about that? not documenting your hydrocodone prescriptions is now discriminating against your friends and neighbors. And because the record keeping was a bit, shall we say, spotty, the investigators really can't quite tell just how many kinfolk, well, kindly old Doc Hensley wrote scripts for. And his lawyer then argued, "Well, I mean, he made some mistakes, but I mean, damn, he was following the spirit of the medical standards." As opposed to, you know, he knew that spirit. I'll bet he knew. Yeah, he's a Christian, full of the spirit. Sometimes multiple spirits, I imagine. Most of them at least 80 proof. He knew that spirit, and that's what he did throughout his practice. He focused on what was good medical care. He's described in the Tennessean article as staunchly conservative. Yes. He's actually on the Health and Welfare Committee of the Tennessee State Senate. That's the committee that regulates opioids in the state of Tennessee. And yes, he would still like to see teachers in the state of Tennessee from prevented from ever even saying the word homosexual. And then, how did the whole thing happen? Well, it happened because a divorce happened. The Nashville Scene, an alternative paper, wrote a story back in 2017 about him, right, kind of being a little pill mill of one during sworn testimony in a scandalous divorce proceeding. Because Lori Barber, who was married to the vice mayor, Don Barber, of Hohenwald, Tennessee, got sworn in, and then she said, well, yeah, Me and Doc Hensley, we had some sexy time. And, yeah, I worked for Doc Hensley. I was a nurse in his office. And, yeah, we're second cousins. And he wrote me lots of prescriptions for chronic back pain. Mm-hmm. Although he firmly believes in both the letter and the spirit of the law, where it would say concern his don't say gay bill, he had a different feeling about opioids and whatnot. He stated that Hohenwald was a very small town, and that just because, I can't quote him directly, but it was something to the effect of, just because they live in a small town didn't mean they should not have to go out of town to see a doctor. Just because they were related to him, they should not have to go out of town to see a doctor. Mm-hmm. So, curiously enough, a number of ads have been run against him of late by people who think that maybe he probably ought not be representing anybody in the state senate of Tennessee. Yeah, about that. Well, I mean, she's my second cousin. Not like she's my first cousin. It's not like she's the daughter of my daddy's brother or my mama's sister or my mama's brother or my daddy's sister. It's second cousin. You're right. Besides, we wasn't going to have no good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gunmentalist babies anyhow, whether they had big ears and buggy eyes and banjos or not. No. Bob, stop telling us how to imagine how fake banjo music should sound. Okay, Jeremy. Yeah, sure thing. You betcha. Help me, Bob, says Scott in San Diego. I just don't remember. In that Hippocratic Oath, the words, first fuck your cousin, don't appear anywhere, right? I've read it in English. I confess my ancient Greek is not so good, but I'm betting I could probably sort out enough of the Eta's and the theta's and the mu's and the nu's and the z's and the gamma's and the deltas and the alphas to figure out that don't. Yeah. Nope. For a minute there, Scott, and you're lucky, and we all are, I thought where you typed the word first, I glanced and I thought it said fist. And we're just going to leave it at that. Okay? Good. Don't get sick in Hohenwald. I mean, generally speaking, don't get sick in America. Don't get sick in Hohenwald. That's Hohenwald. Must have been founded by some German folks. Hohenwald. Hohenwald. Right? Yeah. Sounds a lot like hole in wall, which might be the way that Doc Hensley dispensed those opioids. Sorry. It's a story that just keeps on giving. Earther pointing out, well, of course she needed back pain relief after all those meet and gropes are great. Greets. Get right. You can have a little cowbell too, Earther. Fist or frist? Scott says, asking for a friend. No, I haven't heard much from old Bill the Cat Killer in a while, have we? Nope. Jesus. Well, here we are. We're in the third hour of the program. If anybody wants to jump into the conversation, you're more than welcome. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Brother Deacon. I'm sorry there wasn't a... It didn't end quite the way you wanted, but that's still pretty damn close, isn't it?
And of course, when you see a headline like White House declares pandemic over as it cites renowned scientist Ivanka Trump, you're going to open that, aren't you? Chris D'Angelo at Huffington Post writing, the Trump administration triumphantly declared victory over the coronavirus pandemic on Tuesday, 1 week before the 2020 election, and with COVID-19 cases surging across the country. The lie came in a news release on a new 62-page report from the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, listing what it claims are the scientific and technological accomplishments during President Donald Trump's first term. The list includes ending the COVID-19 pandemic. From the outset of the COVID-19 pandemic, the administration has taken decisive action to engage scientists and health professionals in academia, industry, and government to understand, treat, and defeat the disease. Yeah. That's why we got Scott Atlas. That's why Deborah Birx has been exiled to places like North Dakota. And the release today included a quote from Precious Princess Ivanka My Daddy Trump Kushner.
Over the past 4 years.
I'm going to work into my Ivanka voice.
Over the past 4 years, President Trump's policies and investments in science and technology ensure America stands ready to solve today's most pressing challenges and that our workforce is prepared for tomorrow's innovations. For years to come, these achievements will guarantee the United States remains the world's leader in research, discovery, and the advancement of industries that will shape our future.
There was then much laughter and merriment on social media. Well, there's that. Billable Rick pointing out, second cousins? Since when is there anything improper about having sexy time with your second cousin? Besides, didn't Rudy Handjob Giuliani marry his second cousin? Hey, if it's good enough for America's mayor, isn't it good enough for Doc Hensley? Oh, I'm sure Doc Hensley's a big fan. Randy Radar says, as an abstinent man, it never ceases to amaze me how many people get into trouble just because they can't seem to keep their pants on. I probably wouldn't be abstinent if there was a foolproof pregnancy control method, but so far as I understand it, there isn't, until recently. I had a hard enough time just supporting myself, let alone a wife and some rugrat. Again, for a country that says it values life and don't want no abortions, we're not particularly good about helping to take care of the post-born. Yeah. All right, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you doing there, Mr. Bob?
Oh, I'm well, Kurt. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Well, the COVID rates are doubling and tripling up here in Grand Forks, North Dakota, Stan, and all over North Dakota. You know, it's gotten to the point here, Bob, where they can't even contact Trace anymore.
Not that they were doing much of that to begin with, were they?
Exactly. Right. Well, I thought I'd call, and I haven't talked with you here, for a while, but I wanted to wish you a happy anniversary.
Well, thank you.
What is it, 16 years, was it you said?
Well,
16 years?
We're on year 16 now. It was our 15th anniversary, was technically Saturday, but we celebrated it Friday.
Oh, Friday, yes, that's right. Well, happy anniversary. And I also want to send my condolences to Juanita. I remember Juanita with the sweet, lovely voice. And, well, I hope she's doing well. And
or doing better.
I remember her because, you know.
Just so sad.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Very, very sad. I have been the same. I remember her very well, Bob. You know, because I started listening to you probably in, well, it was either 2006, maybe late 2006, and 2007. So, and I remember her when she would call in, and I recognized her voice all the time when she would call in. And what a very nice lady. Yes. Yes, I remember her very well. But the reason I also called here too, Bob, is I really enjoyed your 2 days with your good friend Dan Fisher.
Isn't Dan just great?
Yes, yes. But you guys forgot one other West Virginian that was very... Well, I don't know how popular she was, but she was in movies, though, Bob, back in the late 40s and through the 50s. She was in a great little noir flick. I can't remember the year of it, but I know it was in the 50s. But the movie was called 99 River Street, and her name is Peggy Castle. I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
I haven't. Now I have to look her up.
Yes, you should. I think she's from Beckley, I think, but I'm not for sure on that. But she had an awful life, though, at the end, though, Bob. She pretty much drank herself to death in her own apartment out in Los Angeles. But she's from your area. Very good-looking gal, what a doll, really, to be honest with you. She was a real doll. She was a blonde, and she was in many Westerns. She was in, you know, some of those old TV shows from the 50s. Peggy Castle is her name.
Do you know what the spelling is on that last name? Is it C-A-S-S-E-L?
C-A-S-T-L-E. Castle, just like a castle.
Oh, my. Yes.
Yes.
99 River Street, Hell's Crossroads.
Right. Crossroads, there you go. Right, right. Yes. But she had an awful life there at the end there, Bob. You know, she wasn't very old either. I think she passed away in her early 40s or something like that.
Okay, she was born in 1927, died 1973. She was actually, it's interesting, right. She was born in a little community called Appalachia, Virginia. Appalachia, Virginia, which kind of doesn't exist anymore. It's been it's been blown to kingdom come by the coal companies. In fact, a little boy named Jeremy Davidson, back at the beginning of this century, had been put to bed in his bed, and mom and daddy had turned out the lights, and he'd gone to sleep, and boulder got loose from up on top of the mountaintop removal site and rolled down the hill and crushed little Jeremy to death. So that's why I always remember the name of Appalachia, Virginia. It's in Wise County, Virginia, about 45% of which is no longer even there.
Now, whereabouts is that from you then, Bob? Is that north or is that more west?
Southeast.
Oh, southeast. Okay. Sure. Wow. Now, was that just... You know, basically, you know, like a mining community then, just kind of a...
Well, back then back then it probably was a mining community, but then along came mountaintop removal and
just kind of blew it to hell. Yeah.
Kingdom come.
Right. Yeah. Jesus. Well, that's too bad. Goodness sakes. But I thought of that when you guys were talking about all these famous West Virginians, and I was surprised that you guys forgot about Peggy Castle. My, you know, but of course, I'm kind of a film noir buff, so I love film noir, and I love film, and I remember, well, in fact, Bob, I was going to tell you, I went to the Film Noir Film Festival out in San Francisco, and this was back in 2007. God, I was what then? Jesus, I was what, 46 years old then?
But I'm just checking through here. I don't think she was a West Virginian.
Oh.
Born in Appalachia, Virginia. Attended private school in Pittsburgh. Attended Hollywood High School.
Which must have moved out there, yeah.
And she didn't come from hard times. Her dad was an executive, a director of industrial relations for a large corporation, and went on to become an entertainment business manager.
Okay. Huh. Well, then I'm wrong.
Well, but I learned something new.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was 1949. She was 1949. She was named Miss Cheesecake.
Miss Cheesecake. Well, she was a doll. I mean, she was a good-looking gal. And I don't mean that to sound sexist or anything, but she was. She was a pretty girl.
Yeah, and I mean, she, Fireside Theater, Cheyenne, 77 Sunset Strip, The Restless Gun.
Yeah, 77 Sunset Strip, yeah, right. Yeah, and she was in a really good Western that I remember watching with Randolph Scott, Tall Target, not Tall Target, Tall Something, I think. But yeah, she was in many films, and I think she was even in Executive Suite. I think she played a secretary, or maybe I'm thinking of another movie that I saw her in. But I kind of thought maybe she was from your area there.
Apparently not. Tall Man Riding.
Tall Man Riding. There you go. That's it. Yes. Yes.
Hell, yeah. She was in Arrivederci Roma.
Sure. Right. But she had kind of an alcohol problem, and, you know, she pretty much, you know, drank herself to death, from what I remember when I read her bio one time. And this was a long time ago, too, so. And, in fact, I just saw her on, she was on, Noir Alley on Turner Classic Movies here a while back, and they were showing 99 River Street. And that's a great little noir flick.
Well, I need to check that out. I've never seen 99 River Street.
Oh, yeah, you should. Yeah. Oh, you should. John Payne is in it, and one of the Adler brothers, you know, from that, acting dynasty, you know, the Adlers, Stella Adler, and
yeah,
all them, and yeah, and yeah, no, it's a great little flick. It's very, very much noir, you know, where the protagonist is kind of caught in between fate, and no matter what the person does, he or she does, they can't seem to get out of it. You know, they're kind of trapped. But I went to San Francisco, Bob, back in, back in 2007, and went to the Film Noir Film Festival at the Castro Theater in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
And a buddy of mine, we pulled our resources together, and we both went, and we got to meet Eddie Muller. I don't know. Do you watch much of Turner Classic Movies by any chance?
Not a lot, but
Oh, okay.
I don't watch a lot of anything. I read more than I do anything else, but a lot of times when I, you know, sure. when I do go over, there's something good at TCM.
Oh, yes, all the time. Well, if it wasn't for TCM, Bob, I wouldn't even have cable at all. I mean, I just wouldn't have it at all, but in order to, you know, to have it, well, you know, I just have the basic tier, you know, as far as cable, but that's the only reason why I have cable is just for, you know, for Turner Classic Movies, because I love that channel. It's my favorite channel. Great old stuff. But anyway, I was going to tell you that on Saturday nights, they have what's called Noir Alley. And there's Eddie Muller is the guy that does the intros to all the noir, you know, movies. But it's on pretty late. I think at your time, it would probably be midnight. And it starts here in the Central Time Zone at around 11. And then there's an encore, like on Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. our time. So it would probably be, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday for you guys out east. But he's the guy that started this film noir film festival, and he's also a head of the Film Noir Foundation. And what they do, Bob, is that they try to rescue all these old films, you know, from oblivion. And, you know, they try to find the 16mm print of it if they can, or else the 35mm print. And they try to save them, and then they restore them. And they also, you know, once they restore them, well, then they will try to put it out on DVD if they can. But, of course, that all depends upon the ownership of, you know, of who owns the film, and or if it's just out of oblivion, you know, if it's just sitting in the vault somewhere rotting away, you know. And we went to this film festival, and we were there, Bob, for 2 weeks. And it was a blast. Yeah, it was a blast, Bob. It was unbelievable. And it was awfully nice, Bob. We got to know Eddie Muller quite well. And he was able to find us a place to stay that was pretty reasonable. And he knew the person that ran this motel. And we told him, you know, what our situation was. And we were both, disabled. So we kind of saved our pennies that year. And we went out there and we got to meet Peggy Cummins, the gal that was in the movie Gun Crazy, which is kind of a cult classic now, you know, from 1950. And she was in her 80s then, but she just passed away here not too long ago. And then we also got to meet Marcia Hunt, who was in a great little noir called Raw Deal with Dennis O'Keefe. And I was trying to think of what year that came out, 48, I think. But we had a blast. You know, I kind of wish, you know, for people like us that, you know, that enjoy the arts, you know, I wish I had the money where I could live in these places where you could go to things like this. You know? But you know,
wow, you're kind of encyclopedic on noir. That's really cool, Kurt. Well, let me turn your attention back. You are in the middle of one of the hottest hot spots in the country right now, North Dakota.
Oh yes, we are. Oh yes, I am.
Tell us a little bit about what's going on there.
Well,
I mean, why is it as bad as it is?
Well, it kind of started when they opened up the colleges, Bob. When these college kids came back here to the university here, that's when it kind of exploded here in Grand Forks anyway. And although we're not as bad as Fargo, and also Bismarck is really bad too right now. They're in Burley County. But I'm in Grand Forks County here, and yes, the positivity rates have really gone up here. And but you know, Bob, I live like right downtown here, and these kids, they're all, you know, like you say, you know, LARPing and then smolicking and drooling all over each other, and there's no social distancing whatsoever, no masks, and the bars are packed, Bob. I mean, they're just incubators.
So how big, I mean, how big, let's see, Grand Forks, which university is that?
Well, that would be UND. That would be the University of North Dakota. We used to be called the Fighting Sioux, but then we changed the name. They got rid of the Fighting Sioux name, you know, the nickname. And now we're called the Fighting Hawks. We're the university that has that, you know, pretty good hockey program here.
Okay.
And, you know, we've drafted a lot of players into the NHL.
It's not a tiny school. I mean, it's.
Oh, no, Bob. No. Well, compared to the bigger universities, you know, like Minnesota. See, I went to the University of Minnesota back in the early 80s, Bob. And I know at that time, the University of Minnesota was around 50,000 students.
Well, at one point in time, the University of Minnesota was the largest university in the United States. I don't know if it still is, but it was back in the day.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. No, it was huge. It was even like a little town that they called, they called Dinky Town. And it was mostly a kind of a university, city. Among itself, you know, but here at UND, we have about 15,000 students here, Bob. So it's not like the University of Minnesota or, like these big 10 schools or anything like that, but it's a good sized school here for its size. And of course we get students, we have a really good aeronautics program here. With the AVs.
When school came back into session, did they just say, screw it, and flung the doors wide? And
yeah, pretty much. Well, they had, they also had some of the, virtual classes too. But yeah, but it was pretty much wide open, Bob. I mean, these, you know, kids just came from all over. You know, we get people from all over here, you know, that come here. And they just pretty much let it go. And we just, we just got a new mayor. And he doesn't know what the hell he's doing either, Bob. I mean, this guy's he's a Trumpyite. And of course, this is what's
Let me ask this. Is there a medical school at UND?
Yes, there is. There is a medical school here. Yes.
What's the medical school community saying about all of this?
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, but I haven't heard a damn thing from what they're saying. No one says anything. And it just, you know, it just basically goes on and on and on. It's, you know, nothing is really said. And then we got this goofy governor here in this state. And he's a businessman too. You know, he's one of these, I don't think he was self-made. I think his family had some money from what I understand. It's just a complete insanity here, Bob. It just doesn't make any sense. And then when they try to establish, you know, like mask wearing, well, there is mask wearing as far as like, you know, most of the stores here, Bob, do have a mandatory mask. So you do have to wear a mask if you go into
But what do they do if you don't? I mean, do they refuse to serve you? Because we've got a mask mandate too, but if you don't want to wear a mask, nobody's going to say, hey, bub, put your mask on.
Well, I do know at the grocery store that I go to, they've had a few problems. And in fact, they even called the cops on one gentleman, I guess, from what I was told. But they also have masks. They're waiting for people. Like if they don't have a mask, you know, they'll have like masks where these people can, you know, they haven't put one on. But then you get these, you know, these, you know, maggots and, you know, these dumb bastards, you know, wow, why do I have to wear that? You know, that sort of nonsense.
Yeah.
Well, and they have people at the door too, Bob. You know, they have people at the door waiting for people to come in and saying, you know, well, here's a mask. If you don't have one, we got one, you know, that type of thing. So it's like an open zoo here, Bob. Pretty much.
Well, that's
pretty much stay at home here all the time, Bob.
Well, you as well you should. But
yes, oh gosh, yes.
But I'm still trying.
Well, I'm pretty much retired now, Bob.
But you still, I mean, can you get your groceries delivered?
Oh yes. Yeah, I can. Well, I also have like a care attendant that comes in here every other week that helps me with laundry and stuff. I've reached a point now, Bob, in my life. See, I walk with braces and crutches.
Right, we've talked.
And yeah. Luckily, I'm still able. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just said we've talked. Yeah, I'm aware that you have some limitations.
Right. And I'm now 59 years old. So, I mean, I've really slowed down now in my later years. So, I have someone that helps me out and she's checked out every day. This care attendant that comes in here every other week. So she comes here, on Thursday. So like, this week, she won't be here, but now the following week or the next Thursday, she'll be here. So, you know, she does grocery shopping, helps me with, you know, laundry and, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah,
is she,
but I can order online.
Is she meticulous? I mean, you know, with the hand washing and the gloves and the mask.
Oh, very, very, very. And she's also older, Bob. She's like in her 60s. So she's a little more grounded. You know, I'm glad that she's older because if she was younger, I would kind of worry about it. But she's very, 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 very meticulous. Yes. And a very nice lady. Yes. And she's not a maggot either, Bob. I mean, she knows that this is pretty serious shit, you know.
That goes a long damn way.
Oh, you're damn right it does. No shit. No, that's right. No, that's right. And especially in a red state here, Bob, that we live in, you know, I mean, Jesus, you know, you deal with all these half-wits here and they're all running around as if there's nothing going on, Bob. It's like the pandemic is not even existing for. It's like, what the fuck are you people thinking?
Well, like the story, you know? I had just before I brought you on the air, the White House has now announced that Donald Trump beat COVID. It's over.
Yeah, no, I saw that too. Right. Yeah, I mean, these people are, well, you know, Bob, do you think he really had it? You know, I'm beginning to think this was all kind of a sham.
I feel like, you know, Alex Jones, if I say that, but, but, you know, how could any competent medical professional let him go out for a honking wave while he's spewing viral particles all over the people trapped inside that hermetically sealed vehicle with him? How do you, and it can't help but make you at least a little bit skeptical.
Right. No, I agree. And I've been going to think.
But then again, when he climbed the stairs and stood up there on the balcony and fish breathed for a little while, it was like, he ain't okay.
Kind of huffing, yeah.
Well, he was doing that.
Right.
You know, with his mouth sort of, you know, fully open, but not, you know, open gasping, but and he's, you know, sucking in through the sides of his. Right. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But then again, you know, maybe it goes to show that this virus can be managed if you have a couple of $100,000 worth of care on the front end.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, that's right. And, you know, but maybe he was acting too. Who knows? And maybe, you know, some people got paid off. You know, there's a lot of,
That would be too much of a conspiracy to expect too many people to maintain their silence.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
So I guess in the long run, I'm going to land on, yeah, he had it, but.
Right. Right.
I feel like Superman.
I feel like, no, I'll tell you, Bob, if this dumb bastard gets back in the office, Jesus, I've been thinking,
maybe I better
start heading for Canada. Well, I got relatives in Canada. I could maybe,
I don't know if they'd let you in, but I'm out of here. I mean, you can almost hear it.
That Dethamexahoosis, that's better than Adderall.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's just,
I don't know. I think you're better off staying with old noir films for the next 7 days. I mean, you've already voted, haven't you, Kirk?
Oh, yes, I have already. Yes, I have. I voted already through the mail here. You know, we have, we have early voting, and then we also had through the mail here early, too. So, yeah, no, I've already voted. I'm all set. I don't go anywhere, Bob. The only place I go to once in a while, if I need something in a pinch, it's to the grocery store, and that's it. I'm in and out of there
What about doctor visits and things like that?
Well, I'm leery about that. I was supposed to have my physical for the year, and I have put that off. I was supposed to go there, back in September, but I canceled it because I'm even leery to even go there. But then, you know, you have people there at the clinic.
Are they doing telemedicine in North Dakota?
Not that I'm aware of. There could be, but I'm not aware of it. But yeah, I'm even scared to even, you know, to even mess with that too, you know, for the physical. Although, I mean, I don't have any major problems. I don't have diabetes or anything like that. I mean, I'm actually, you know, pretty healthy for my age, from what they tell me. My cholesterol's low and my blood pressure's good, and which I've really been fortunate. But I've also watched what I eat, and I've done that ever since I left the Crippled Children's School when I was a kid. And you know, Bob, I still weigh the same amount as I did when I was in college.
Wow!
So I'm in pretty good shape, but it's just that my legs just aren't as strong as they used to be, and I don't have the endurance. My shoulders are getting sore for walking on crutches for over 50. What now? Shit, I started walking on crutches when I was 6. I'm 59 now, so that would be 53 years of walking on crutches. So my shoulders are getting pooped out. My legs are getting pooped out. But otherwise, you know, I was told that I'm healthier than a bed bug, but I'm a little bit leery about going to have a physical and all this stuff because, you know, you just don't know, Bob. You know, you don't know who has it and who doesn't have it.
But you do know that you live in a maggot state that's that's bound to be full of people who think it's a Wuhan flu that's a Democratic hoax. I mean, it's kind of like me being in West Virginia. You just have to acknowledge the reality of where the hell you are.
That's right. Exactly. No, that's right. That's right. And, yeah, I, And in fact, Bob, I pretty much hold my own counsel here in the apartment building that I live in, because some of these people that live in here, you know, they don't have a clue, some of these people.
Oh, there's probably more than a few MAGA hats in there, Kurt.
Right. No, that's right. So I pretty much hold my own counsel here, Bob. I sort of have separated myself from it all, you know, and I talk to people over the phone, of course, and stuff like that. But as far as here in the building, no. Well,
do you feel, I mean, the isolation can make you a little bit, do you feel like your mental health has held up fairly well?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I stay pretty busy, Bob. I've been away, how can I put this, Bob? You know, when I was going to school down at the Crippled Children's School, when I left home, Bob, at the age of 5 years old, God. You know, you got to remember, that was like 400 miles from my hometown, Bob. And I lived in dormitories, with other disabled children. And this was in Worthington, Minnesota, which is in the southwest corner of Minnesota. And my hometown is way up in the Canadian border. Well, actually, my hometown from here is about 75 miles northeast of here in Grand Forks. But it's on the Minnesota side. I'm from Minnesota originally, Bob. But I was there for 9 years down at Worthington. And no, the isolation doesn't really bother me. It's when I don't have much to do, then I'll get a little bit antsy or a little bit anxious, you know, that type of thing. But I stay pretty busy, and I don't mind my privacy. But yeah, I kind of wish I could, you know, like I could go out, you know, to restaurants and bars like I used to do, you know, and meet with people and, you know, and I...
Yeah, sit down and throw back a cold foamy malt beverage, sure.
Right, right. And, but, you know, I haven't done that now. And, well, I just haven't been to the bars all that much ever since probably, what, my 48th birthday? You know, I went out for a couple, you know, you know, when you get older, you know, a person gets sort of world weary, and then you kind of get, you know, I've been here, done that. And now, you know, when you go to the bars, well, it's mostly these, you know, kids that are in their 20s. And, you know, I could be their dad, you know. So, you know, you sort of feel out of place. Yeah.
Well, Kurt, you got a note from Billable Rick. He said, once the Don Demick is over, Kurt needs to come to L.A., and we can attend the TCM Film Festival, which is ordinarily held each summer around July. Yeah. TCM is also one of my favorite channels. It's showing some really good Halloween movies right now. Last night I watched The Satanic Rites of Dracula, 1973, starring Peter Cushing as vampire hunter Van Helsing and Christopher Lee as Count Dracula. Very entertaining movie and good acting. See, I could never watch that, or I'd have bad dreams when I went to sleep.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, do you, Bob? Do you?
Oh, I can't. I don't do horror movies or roller coasters. I don't do either one. Okay, wait. Horror movies, roller coasters, and hallucinogens.
Oh, well, yeah, that part I could see. Yes, yes. Yeah, no, I would love to come out to L.A. You know, I've never been to L.A., I've only been to San Francisco, and that was the first time I ever went to California. I've been to Washington State back in, oh God, that was in the early 80s. I was in Seattle. I spent a summer there with a cousin of mine back in 1980, yeah.
It well, you know, you also
college, that graduate.
You also just got a note from Darlene in Connecticut. She says, you know, a manual wheelchair is not a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with using it.
I love my power wheelchair, and I'm only 55. Yeah. Kurt sounds stronger than me, and it might give his shoulders and legs a rest, and he can switch back and forth between the crutches and the wheelchair to change things up and vary it throughout the day. I love the way this community cares about each other.
Right. Well, no. What was her name again? I remember
that was
her
Darlene.
Name. She's from Connecticut, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Darlene.
Yeah, Darlene. Yeah. Darlene. Yeah. Yeah, no, Darlene, I do have a wheelchair, and it's a manual wheelchair, and I do sit in it, and but I like to try and move around as much as I can, but when my braces are off, well, then I can't walk, so I'm usually in the wheelchair. Once the braces are off, I'm in the wheelchair. And speaking of the wheelchair, when I was at the Crippled Children's School, when we were kids, oh, my God, Bob, we had a blast. Outside of the school was this steep ramp. And during the wintertime, Bob, down at the bottom of the ramp, well, it would ice up. And we used to fly down this ramp and then grab a hold of our wheels, and we would slide all the way out into the street.
Jesus,
I mean,
Kurt.
It was just craziness.
Wait a minute. Was this the Crippled Children and Juvenile Delinquent School? Did you leave out the gym? That's great. That's great. Hey, Muriel, it's iced up.
A combination of both.
It's iced up at the school again. They're playing Demolition Derby.
Well, speaking of that, that is so funny that you say that, Demolition Derby. Bob, we had a hockey team. We had a floor hockey team. How can I put this, Bob? And it was great fun. It was like hell on wheels.
Wait a minute. Hell on wheels. You get a cowbell for that, Kurt.
But I was just going to tell you, Bob, when we played floor hockey, it was like a combination of two things. Roller derby and demolition derby all rolled into one. I mean, I swear to God, it was like complete chaos. Do you remember like roller derby when?
Oh, sure. What I especially remember, there was like one week in seventh grade when, and remember, this is right. Alabama, and we don't know from hockey in Alabama. Okay.
Right.
I mean, every now and then some northern children would move down because their dad's got a job with TVA or something, and so they'd come home and like they'd travel 40 miles to play hockey every Saturday or something, and we were like, "What the hell's wrong with you?" I mean, but in seventh grade we got a floor hockey, you know, the hockey sticks and the little hollow rubber puck.
Right.
And there were nets for either end of the, and you played it on you played it on the gymnasium basketball court floor. And it was disorganized mayhem because the coach, long suffering man, was like, okay, this is how it's played. Okay, these are the rules. We're like, cool. And started beating the hell out of each other with the hockey sticks. And occasionally hitting the puck or maybe throwing it at each other. And it was the most fun I had ever in PE in my public school career in Northwest Alabama. And we begged for him to put the hockey stuff back out. And he said, no, never again. I will never do that again. Not with an ever, ever, ever. I've sent them back. I've burned them. I've gotten rid of that. You will never see those hockey sticks and pucks again. Ever.
Right. But it was a lot of fun, Bob. Oh my God!
Well, you
it
see,
was
you're
crazy.
You're tickling the brain cells of members of the community. Greg just wrote in and said, UND, home of the 11,643-seat NCAA Division I hockey's infamous Ralph Engelstad Arena that was built for $100 million and which opened its doors in 2001. Mr. Deep Pockets himself, right. Old Ralph Engelstad, who owned the Imperial Palace Casino in Lost Wages, Nevada, where he had a collection of Nazi memorabilia stored in a private room, which he referred to as his war room, once even threatened to stop construction of the Ralph if UND changed its Fighting Sioux nickname and logo.
The Ralph.
That is correct.
The Ralph was built with materials that would not usually be found in such a facility. For instance, concourses of the REA are covered in granite flooring. Each spectator seat is made out of cherry wood and leather upholstery. Escalators bring spectators between levels, and full-color LCD displays dot the arena. The great one, Wayne Gretzky, has called it one of the most beautiful buildings we have in North America. UND is also home of the Betty, its basketball facility, named for Ralph's wife, and was also paid for by Mr. Deep Pockets. But while Ralph grew up in Thief River Falls, Minnesota, and played hockey there and at UND,
right,
it's unfucking known where the hell Betty ever played basketball at in her lifetime. So,
right.
Thank you,
that
Greg. I have learned something new this evening from both you and Kurt and John in Fargo, North Dakota. It's North Dakota night on the horn, folks.
Wow.
I've seen a lot COVID in North Dakota. John says, I've seen a lot of chin strap masks around, as well as a lot of Dolt 45 masks. A lot of school districts in the state are having all students come back to class. One district south of Fargo isn't mandating any mask wearing. On top of that, we have a ballot measure to allow the legislature to involve itself in the initiative and referendum process. I'm 5 minutes away from Minnesota. Lucky me.
Right.
And John says, hi, Kurt!
Hello, John. Well, I'm just over the river here, John. I'm just across the Red River. I live right downtown here in the big city of Grand Forks, and all I got to do is just walk across the bridge, and I'm in Minnesota.
I got to get more conversant with the geography up there. I thought you were halfway to Nome, Alaska. Jeremy in Vermont says,
"Well, not quite, Bob. Not quite that far north."
Jeremy in Vermont says, "Damn it, Kurt! I have the use of all my limbs, and I've never done half the stuff you did as a child."
Well, we were pretty crazy, but you know, it was kind of interesting back in those days. See, when I went to that school, this was back in 1966. I got to remember that was also part of the hippie era of that time. And in the evenings, well, we had like college students that would work there at the school, you know, to help kids undress and get ready for bed. And you know, there was medication that needed to be handed out. And well, most of the workers, what we called them workers back then, well, most of the workers that worked there were hippies. It was like a hippie commune. I mean, it was the craziest thing you'd ever seen in your life. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, you know, I could tell you stories about that. But, of course, those were the times. See, at that time, a lot of disabled people or, you know, children were not really allowed to go to public schools. For one thing, you know, the public schools were not equipped. You know, there were no ramps in those days.
No.
There weren't elevators or escalators or whatever, you know. So that was how that was, you know, dealt with.
Well, Darlene just sent me a link, and you might want to jot this down if you don't already know about it. She said it's My Life Glider, MyLife GLIDER.com, My Life Glider. And Darlene said, share this with Kurt if you can. There are three different sizes based on height. He might really like this. If he has a doctor or a physical therapist, then I suggest he run it by them first. You can try it out for 30 days. It runs in the $700 range, which isn't that expensive according to my PT. I bought one, and you can do a no-interest payment plan through Klarna for 6 months to pay it off. I use it to exercise in my house. So mylifeglider.com.
Sure.
You might find it.
Yeah. I just wrote it down. Yeah. I just wrote it down. Yeah.
Give you some relief.
Yeah.
Sure. And our buddy Dave in the blind, says, by the way, there are two wheelchairs here in the blind. I'm wondering if anybody else has ever played wheelchair basketball. It's almost a religious experience here in Talladega, Indiana.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. No, I played wheelchair basketball, too. Yes. Oh, God, yeah. Crazy. It, Yeah, and then, of course, when you play wheelchair basketball, you can only push off your wheelchair three push-offs and then dribble. And then you do it again and again and again. that's how the rules were. And we used to play, when I got like a little bit older, I was on the floor hockey team, but then I also played a little bit of, in a wheelchair basketball, but we used to play at the high school auditorium there in Worthington, and we would play against the, like the high school teachers and we would put them in wheelchairs, or else the teachers that worked at the school, and we would put them in wheelchairs but we would just smoke them, it was a lot of fun.
Jesus.
God, I'm with Jeremy. He had a blast. Randy in PA says, we invented a game in high school called janitor ball. We used to go to school in loafers and kick a number 9 chemistry beaker stopper around the floor, leaving dark scuff marks on the neatly polished tile flooring, which the janitors, of course, hated. So the secondary game became that of hiding from the janitorial staff. I think there's a little juvenile delinquent in all of us, isn't there, Kurt?
Oh, I think so. Right. Right.
Well, what a conversation this has been.
Well, you gotta let it loose.
You stay safe, my friend, and it sounds like you're doing it right. And maybe get your assistant to bring in a 6-pack of cold and frothy malt beverages or something. Although that whole just sitting there in your apartment pounding down a 6-pack, might not be your cup of tea. But then again, neither is going to a bar anymore because I know the feeling. I like bars where you can carry on a conversation and whatnot. Most of the time, it's hard to do now because you're damn well deafened by all of that music.
Music.
Turn the music down. I'm trying to talk. Damn it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's. But you know, Bob, I never thought, in our lifetime that it would ever get to this level. I mean, Jesus Christ, I thought the 80s was even insane, but this is just, unbelievable.
When a staid and stolid resident of the upper Midwest, your Minnesota, your North Dakota says, Jesus Christ, Bob, you've reached apocalyptic levels. I mean, I've got enough experience over time now that I can recognize that. When the Minnesotans are going, this is off the chain.
Right.
Well, Kurt, you have yourself a good evening, my friend. I'm awfully glad you called in. You made it. You made for a wonderful wrap to the end of the program. And please stay safe and feel free to report in on the madcap comings and goings of the fine folks of North Dakota there, who are sure it's no worse than the flu.
Right. Well, it was nice talking with you too, Bob, and happy anniversary, and nice to hear from the Horn family, and we'll talk again sometime.
Okay, great. With winter coming, you stay safe and you stay warm, you hear?
Will do. You too, Bob.
All right, take care, Kurt. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's Kurt calling from Grand Forks, North Dakota. Fantastic conversation. Program winds up that way. Hey, listen, with 5 minutes to go in the program, we got $30 to go on Darlene's challenge. Please, either if you're listening now or part of the overnight crew, don't let that challenge slide by, because that's a huge help from Darlene. And I hate to see challenges. People put this money up offering to double yours. It means a lot that we be able to meet these things. So pretty pleased. And thank you again to Charlene in Rogues Island. And thank you to Kat in Ohio. And thank you so much to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you all very much indeed. And, I guess that really does pretty much bring us to the end of the program. By the way, 78-year-old Leslie Stahl now has
24/7 police protection because of threats on her life reported by TMZ. An unidentified suspect called her and threatened her and her family, saying, quote, something about neo-Nazis. And somehow or another, they don't have the ability to trace it. I go figure. But she has full security at her home and when she goes out in public. And all because Nitwit Nero walked out on a meeting with her. And she said, I've got more questions. And after Nitwit Nero released the footage ahead of CBS, they said his decision to upload the 37-minute video before the official release date would, quote, not deter 60 Minutes from providing its full, fair, and contextual reporting, which presidents have participated in for decades. And over 17 million people tuned in to view it Sunday. It was CBS's largest audience since the Stormy Daniels segment in 2018. Because Trump was trying to hurt their numbers, because that's all he ever thinks about is ratings. As President Obama pointed out, he's jealous that COVID is getting more coverage than him. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. 6 days, y'all. 6 days. However weird yesterday was, today was weirder still. And no matter how weird today was, as odd as and unbelievable as it may seem, tomorrow is going to be even more so. So, you know, strap in. Bumpy ride. That's all I'm saying. Exactly. Randy pointing out, Trump took his ball and went home. And left a binder full of not health care plan that he claimed was a health care plan. Jesus. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your subscriptions, PayPal, Patreon, your a la carte contributions. Thank you so very much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, head on .live. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Won't be saying that for much longer either. That changes over on Sunday. And it's just getting, that means it just gets grimmer and darker. I know. No, it doesn't, but I know. But 9 p.m., Malloy on the way. Best place to listen live is at headon.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay home if you can, because, as Kurt pointed out, it's getting nasty out there. If you can't stay home, if you have to be out and about, for God's sakes, please wear your mask. Wear your gloves. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you everywhere. Maintain your social distance. As Paul from Parts Unknown advises, not 6 feet, not 10 feet, more like 15, or the more the merrier. And if somebody comes towards you saying, well, I didn't know I couldn't write a prescription for hydrocodone for the second cousin that I was having sex with. Avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.